This episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you by NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. Bring all your digital marketing to a new level with their simple three-click method. And by Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
Someone approached me with an opportunity to partner with him in something that was not real estate related, but there was a real estate component. They needed to find, I'll tell you what it was. I'm not trying to be secretive, but it was adult foster care facilities. They were putting these together, and it was a gentleman who had an affiliation with some hospitals and some contacts. And he's like, but I need to find houses and get them renovated and make them conform to the regulations and all this.
Right. It sounded like an altruistic thing. So what are adult foster care?
It's adults, seniors who need day-to-day help, but they don't need to be hospitalized necessarily.
Right.
But they can't function on their own. They need help.
It's like a group home where they're living together and they might have a job and they go back and forth. Yeah. I understand. Yeah.
Yep, exactly that. So I partnered with him. My responsibility was to find, renovate, and maintain these facilities, and then he would bring in the residents, and he had the relationships and all this. Sounds great. There's definitely opportunity for profit in this. But what happened was I got myself into a situation where I didn't have control over the success or failure of the business model. The revenue was generated all from the healthcare side, right? And I have no interest, but I certainly have no contacts and no experience. So long story short, won't bore you. It went south. I lost a lot of money.
Right.
So I kind of went back to my wife and I'm like, listen, this is what happened. And she's like, that's awful. Okay, here's the deal. This is her talking. We're not going to do anything for 6 months. You need to take a break. All real estate, all entrepreneurship has to go on pause for a minute. I need a chance to regroup mentally.
But did you have a job at that point?
I still had a job at this point. Okay. Yep. And I said, okay, that's fair enough.
Now, before you get to that, can I ask you a question? Yeah. When you say the business failed, did it fail because of something he did that was unscrupulous? Did he take advantage of things? We couldn't get the people?
You couldn't get the people. Okay. So in that business, you do need a nurse on,
of course,
in-house or on
site. Licensed RN, right?
24/7, yes, 24/7. And if you have... Okay, and the house would hold 6 residents, right? That's the regulation.
That's the size of the
size of it, right? At 6 residents, it's producing good cash flow, significant profits. At 3 residents, it's breaking even, and at 1 resident, it's hemorrhaging money.
Right. So you got to fill this building up, basically.
Got to fill it. And we couldn't fill it, long story short.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
Hi, my name is Mike Simmons. I am a speaker, author, and a serial entrepreneur, and I also am a real estate investor. I started real estate investing about 10 years ago and built up a portfolio of rentals and also do quite a bit of fix and flips. So I've been kind of doing this for a while now and love writing books. I've got my first one coming out soon, so look for that.
All right, Mike. So thanks for coming on the podcast on... what is out here, at least, a yucky Friday. We got in New Jersey, we may get snow.
Oh, you know what? My daughter is about to give birth. She is eminently giving birth. And
congratulations.
She wrote me today and said, today would be a great day to give birth because We are not only in the middle of a worldwide pandemic, it's May and it's snowing out.
Yeah. She lives in New Jersey, upstate New York, or
she lives in Michigan, actually.
Oh, wow.
And not with me, but in Michigan also. And right. It's snowing here in Michigan.
Nice.
It's crazy.
You look a little young to be having a daughter who's having children.
You are fantastic for saying. Thank you. I think I look too young too, but sometimes I worry that we all look in the mirror and we see something different than what the rest of the world sees.
Oh, we definitely do. But I think it's the other way around. I think they think you look younger than you probably think you look, but it just seems to be. Maybe you had kids when you're 7. I don't know.
I had kids young, but she's 28, so she's not young. She's young, but
yeah.
Not crazy young to have kids. So
no,
yeah, I'm just, hey man, I'll take it. I'm a young looking grandpa. I'll take that.
You need it when they're right. Running around and stuff. I have friends that, my daughter babysits for, they just had twins like 3 weeks ago and it's their second and third. So they had had one who's like, I don't know, 20 months or something or.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then she finds out she's having twins, all boys. So my daughter's in heaven cause she loves kids and she's over there now. She had to get all cleaned up and everything, and she's helping them, and then they got their hands full. But
that's crazy. Yeah. Twins have, second and third being twins with all of them that young. Woo.
Oh, my God. It's just like, boom, instant family.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was hard raising three. I couldn't imagine doing two at the same time.
I raised three also, and it was hard enough, and they were spaced out, a little bit. So, my gosh.
Yeah. And they're never nice enough to, like, stay on the same schedule. You know, so
goodbye free time.
Right.
Goodbye anything. It's just,
I know,
24/7 going to be kids. So
absolutely. So, okay. So let's talk about, let's go back a little bit. You tell me about your background and, where you grew up and how you got into business and entrepreneurship and some of the businesses. Sure. And then we'll work that up to what you're doing now. And we can talk about your new book and all that kind of stuff.
Awesome.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. Love it.
Okay.
So, I started off in being an entrepreneur, really in business, back in 2008. And the way it came about is I'm in Michigan, born and raised, family, very blue collar, automotive union mentality, and in my family, getting into a union, having benefits, and paid vacation for a couple weeks a year,
right?
And kind of working for 30-40 years in that environment,
that's what you're taught, right?
That was what I was taught. That was that's the goal. There is no other goal. And there was nobody in my family or even remotely related to my family who was entrepreneurial,
right?
So,
and they say in the old days, if your dad was a plumber, good chance you're going to be a plumber.
Yeah. And honestly, in my family, not only was it encouraged to go work for a factory and be in kind of a union situation, it was almost like you felt like you had to, like you were going to be in trouble as a 16, 17-year-old. Like, that's, I don't do that. I'm going to shame the family.
Kind of, right. Are you near Detroit in that area?
Yeah. I grew up about 45 minutes south of Detroit,
on
the border. Yeah. Right on the border of Michigan and Ohio.
Right. Okay.
Right down there. And, right out of high school, pretty close, I did get a job working for UPS, actually. Not a factory, but UPS.
Okay. Union, the whole deal.
Yeah, steady
benefits,
paycheck.
Stock options, the whole thing.
Oh, my dad could not have been happier. Like, he was on cloud nine.
Right.
So I worked there. I started when I was 18 or 19, and I worked there until I was about 24. And the reason I left mostly was I hurt my back. Like, I was a young 20 something and I needed to go to the chiropractor 3 days a week just to get out of bed in the mornings.
Wow.
I had really jacked my back.
Were you driving a route? Were you working in the warehouses?
Both. I would load the trucks
loading packages.
Yeah. And then I would drive them in the afternoon and evening. And I hurt myself loading the trucks because if you ever saw, this is an old reference, but most people have seen it, the episode of I Love Lucy where she's like in the chocolate factory and the chocolate's coming down, right? And she's stuffing them all over.
Matter of fact, Will and Grace just redid that
in
their last episode, right?
Yep, you're exactly right. So that was kind of the situation, but it was with, 30 to 50 pound boxes on a conveyor belt. And I was moving them as fast as I could and just, pop, snap, kabang, and my back is
Yeah, you're young. You probably don't do it right? When we're young, we didn't care. We didn't bend at the knees.
No.
We just, right.
Yeah, you're invincible when you're 20.
Yeah, of course.
So I lifted horribly. It was really my fault, but hurt my back anyway. So I had to leave there. I knew I couldn't retire from there. I was basically an invalid at 24 years old. I could barely move. So went into the automotive industry now, right? Went from that to into the automotive industry. And I was in there, I was in that industry for a while. And really, this is, you know, this is a generalized statement and it's my experience, but the automotive industry is filled with very unhappy people who just don't love their lives. And
it's like that kind of an environment.
Miserable, you know, meat grinder for the soul kind of a situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, I did that for about eight years before a light went off. And I was like, you know what, like, how do I get out of this? Like,
right.
I should be taking steps to help get myself out of this, or at least have a plan for retirement or something that I'm doing right. other than just going to work and letting the man.
Now, Mike, when you got injured at UPS and you went on to work in the automotive industry, how did you correct your physical problems that had occurred? Do you need surgery or stuff?
No,
or?
I didn't. I continued going to a chiropractor. But honestly, just getting out of that environment. And when I said I went into the automotive industry, I went into a desk job.
Yeah. Weren't working on the line, like lifting large automotive parts. No, I understand.
No, I stopped doing that kind of physical labor.
It was white collar more, right?
Yeah. Much more white collar. And honestly, I didn't do anything to fix it. I just stopped doing the stuff that was hurting it more.
Just let your body heal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, like, to this day, if you said, "Hey, Mike, can you come over? I'm going to move. Can you help me load up the U-Haul?"
That's probably a bad idea.
Yeah. But my back would be screwed the next
day. I have the same problem with the shoulder. Basically it's healed. But if I go and start lifting boxes, I'm going to rip it again. And yeah.
Yep. It feels great day to day.
But you don't want to get surgery. That's always the worst. Then you start going downhill from
definitely
there.
Definitely afraid of surgery.
Yeah.
That could go so poorly.
Yeah.
But in that environment, and I just really started like wondering what can I do for myself to get out of the situation or at least have a plan for exit.
Right.
And so it just occurred to me, because it's just common sense, I need to invest money. I need to invest in something. And usually when one thinks of investing, their mind goes right to like stocks and the stock market and how do I learn that whole world. So I started trying to figure out how to invest in stocks and the stock market and back then day trading was
right. It was still
a popular thing.
Right. Yeah. There were a lot of systems and seminars, right? I remember all those.
Yep. So I would hop on the internet and really go to work trying to figure this out. And I just have a low tolerance for stuff that bores me, and I would get bored, and I couldn't stay focused on stocks and stock market.
Very technical.
Wasn't interested.
It's not hands on. Yeah, there's nothing hands on.
It was like reading an insurance manual for me. Right. I just couldn't get into it. But when you do that, eventually, if you search investing long enough, you'll hit real estate investing.
Yeah,
you'll come across your radar. So even back then, it's probably even more popular now. But back then, so I started reading about these folks who were doing real estate investing, and it really interested me. I didn't get bored. I didn't lose focus. I was really, really interested. And I just started reading books, attending seminars, watching webinars, and trying to immerse myself into that world to try to figure out what it was all about.
Well, Mike, I think if you go back, like before the internet, any of those direct response, you know, TV shows where you could get a series and learn about things, they were generally about real estate. I mean, because you didn't have online things to be able to do trading.
Yeah.
It was all about what you can do in your community and flips and buy properties and hold them. It was the rich dad, poor dad.
Yep.
Era, basically.
If you remember, Carlton Sheets was
I remember Carlton Sheets. That was the program. That was the first. It. Yeah.
100%. That was it.
Carlton Sheets. Is he still around? Is he?
I think he passed away recently.
Did he?
When I say recently, within the last few years.
Or where you're talking, I'll look it up and let's see if he did or not.
Okay. I'm pretty sure I heard he passed away.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. He wasn't young then.
No, he was not young in the late 80s, early 90s when he was really blowing up late night stuff.
Yeah.
That's what I found. And for me, while you're looking that up, I'll tell you, I really was interested, but I'll tell you what happens to a lot of people when they decide they want to change their life. Well, they start reading about it and they get this paralysis analysis.
Mike, I think he's still alive.
Oh, did I kill him inadvertently? I thought he was alive.
No. Yeah.
I thought he had passed.
I don't think so. It doesn't say he passed on Wikipedia. It says when he was born.
When was he born? Funny. Let me guess.
Born 1939.
Okay. I would have guessed sometime in the 40s, but okay.
Yeah.
1939. So he's an older guy.
So that makes him what, around 80? Roughly?
Roughly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 80 would have been 2019. So correct. Yeah.
He's okay. 81. Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're not killing him yet.
So that's what I did. And I actually got a little frozen with analysis, so to speak. And back in the early 2000s, I started kind of getting the bug, but I didn't buy my first house and really start my business until 2008. So there were some years of getting ready to get ready. And
right.
I had some personal stuff going on in the middle there where it was kind of derailing me. But ultimately, I allowed myself to get bogged down in the learning and not mm-hmm. execute, right?
Yeah, like kind of get comfortable. So yeah. A little bit too minutiae, you think? It was just got to pull the trigger already?
Like with anything that you're about to start, especially when there's risk of, you know, there's monetary risk involved.
Right.
I think people think they don't know enough yet. If I just, I'll learn a right. little bit more, another technique, another right. thing.
I think they're also afraid of like failing and then their family or their relatives or their friends say, what are you doing? What are you, stupid? You don't do that stuff. And
totally. I didn't tell anybody. I have kind of a funny little story I'll tell you about that exact phenomenon.
Good.
So my wife and I decided we're not telling anybody that we're investing in real estate, right?
Right.
Let's wait until we become successful or something that's respectable before we tell anybody. So we did. We started flipping houses and it was going pretty well. And I had a Facebook business page called Michigan Real Estate, right?
Okay.
So pretty decent URL in Facebook. And this was back in the mid to late 2000s.
This was your business page? It wasn't a group. Yeah, it was correct. Your business
page. It was
my personal follow business. It, whatever. Yeah. Okay.
Yep. And we would post stuff on there that we were doing and videos and before and afters. So we got approached. I got a call out of the blue from the Detroit Free Press, which is the largest newspaper in Metro Detroit.
Okay.
And they said, hey, we're doing an article on real estate investors, and we want to know if we can interview you. And we were like, yeah, sure, no problem. So they came out to one of the houses we were flipping, and they took a few pictures, interviewed us for a little while, and said, okay, thank you very much. My wife and I figured, you know, it's going to be on page 12F of the Sunday page. You know, no one's ever going to, it's going to be buried, right?
Right.
Newspaper comes out, front page, full page, color photo of my wife and I.
You're
right?
Kidding.
We happened to be at my parents' house that Sunday having dinner, and the phone rings, and my mom picks it up, and she goes, oh, hi, talking to my uncle. And she goes, they're where? For what? Like, we had not told my parents yet.
They
we
didn't ended even up on tell, the front page. And they didn't tell you? Like, listen, I just want you to know you're going to be on the front page?
No, no. We assumed it would be buried in obscurity.
I think that's how, like, Chip and Joanna Gaines got started. Somebody, like, called them, and Joanna's like, who is this? Mike, are you playing a joke on us? This isn't real.
Yeah.
And the people came out to interview, and next thing you know, they wanted to do the show, and they didn't think it was real at all.
That's funny.
Yeah, things just kind of happen. Well, I guess newspapers need stories, right? Somebody was doing a thing on real estate, and you said it was 08, so the market had collapsed. Things were coming back. If you had money, there was opportunities, and obviously somebody thought it was important, but didn't really tell you.
And that's how my family found out we were flipping houses. We were featured on the front page of the biggest.
But that's better than them finding Carlton Sheets' stuff in your bedroom and go, what are you reading this crap for? You know, what are you, crazy? Exactly. You're going to try and make it. And you're like, no. Look, the whole world thinks we're smart. We know what we're doing.
Yeah, exactly. So that was interesting. So that's how we revealed it to our family.
Did that change things? Like, now people knew who you were? Were people calling you? Were, you know, because nowadays things pop out of the woodwork when you get publicity.
Not on a big scale, but locally, it definitely put us on the map, you know, with some of the local groups and things like that. We became mini celebrities within our own little market. People wanted us to speak at meetups and stuff like that. But yeah, that's kind of how we did it. And I was still working full time when that article came out. I had not made the switch to full-time entrepreneur. I was kind of
It was a side hustle at that point. Yeah.
Total side hustle, which, by the way, incidentally, did not go over well with the company I worked for either.
That didn't help.
They weren't thrilled.
They saw the article too?
Yeah, it was interesting. I'll tell you, it really, this isn't funny. This was serious.
Yeah, but there's nothing like, there's no reason why you can't invest in real estate in this. It's not like you're sneaking out of work.
No, there isn't. But at that time, 2008, the company I worked for, and I won't name them,
you weren't in automotive anymore?
I was.
Oh, yes, so it's a car company we can't name.
Yeah, okay. I won't name them. It wasn't a great response. But the company was actually fine. But the problem is, back then, at that particular time, there were a lot of layoffs in the automotive industry. I mean, people were getting laid off.
Yeah, because everything was going on in the economy. Yes. Sure.
So what happened was, it wasn't so much the company, but the workers, the people who worked there, started saying, hey, he's got this, he's flipping houses, making all this money. He should be the next one to be laid off. Like, that was sort of like,
right, he doesn't need the money.
The townsfolk were coming out with the pitchforks and basically saying, fire him, get rid of him.
He's
he's got money coming in. Right. So it was really weird, you know, and I had to actually go to HR. And this is, by the way, this is an international company. This isn't a small company.
Right.
I had to go to HR. And luckily, the head of HR, who was very cool, a lady, said, I got to tell you, you're fine. Don't worry about your job. I'd love to sit down and talk to you. I think it's great what you're doing, and I'm fascinated. I'm very interested. So luckily, she was sort of a fan of the whole idea.
Right.
Could have went the other way, because there were a lot of people who were coming to HR saying, lay him off.
Right.
He needs to be laid off tomorrow. Not me. I have a family and I have no other income, you know? So it's kind of a weird time, but anyways, got through it.
Okay. So that's a great story. Like, because all of a sudden, boom, you're like thrown outside into the sunlight.
Yeah. And there were some haters for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So where'd you go from there? So now you were doing like your first house at that time, or?
We were probably on our fourth or fifth house at that time.
And you were doing a little bit of fix ups and flipping them, or are you building a portfolio?
We were not building a portfolio back then. We were simply fix and flip. And my wife was involved at that time. She was my business partner, and she handled a lot of the details, going to closings, getting insurance, making sure we have a utilities turnout, all that stuff that I abhor. And I was finding contractors, negotiate them, holding them accountable, and making sure the work's getting done. And we had a good little system. You know, we would do a house, we'd find a house, we'd do a house, we'd find a house.
You weren't going crazy with renovations. Nope. Like, you weren't gutting them to the studs and then... were fixing them up.
We were doing.
You don't always get your money out if you go too crazy.
Carpet kind of jobs. Yeah. Okay. Pretty some straightforward sheet rock. Stuff.
Yeah.
Very limited though. Very limited sheetrock. Most of it was just ripping out kitchen cabinets, bathroom cabinets,
putting replacing basic the stuff,
flooring,
getting out, and selling it.
Exactly. A couple of months and we're out. So we were doing that, doing one at a time, and we were kind of going on great. Like I said, we had a little mini celebrity thing going locally, and people knew who we were, and kind of thought we were doing really cool stuff. And along about that time, I started to think that everything I touched turned to gold. I could literally do anything.
Yeah, that's
nothing
not good.
Would go wrong, right? So I was approached by
someone. It's like when life is going to knock you over the head with a 2x4, just
exactly
when that happens.
When you think nothing can happen.
Yeah, of course.
It was around that time someone approached me with an opportunity to partner with him in something that was not real estate related, but there was a real estate component. They needed to find, I'll tell you what it was. I'm not trying to be secretive, but it was adult foster care facilities. They were putting these together, and it was a gentleman who had an affiliation with some hospitals and some contacts. And he's like, but I need to find houses and get them renovated and make them conform to the regulations and all this.
Right. It sounded like an altruistic thing. So what are adult foster care?
It's adults, seniors who need day-to-day help, but they don't need to be hospitalized necessarily.
Right.
But they can't function on their own. They need help.
It's like a group home where they're living together and they might have a job and they go back and forth. Yeah. I understand. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly that. So I partnered with him. My responsibility was to find, renovate, and maintain these facilities. And then he would bring in the residents, and he had the relationships and all this. Sounds great. There's definitely opportunity for profit in this. But what happened was I got myself into a situation where I didn't have control over the success or failure of the business model. The revenue was generated all from the healthcare side, right? And I have no interest, but I certainly have no contacts and no experience. So long story short, it won't bore you. It went south. I lost a lot of money.
Right.
So I kind of went back to my wife and I'm like, listen, this is what happened. And she's like, that's awful. Okay. Here's the deal. This is her talking. We're not going to do anything for 6 months. You need to take a break. All real estate, all entrepreneurship has to go on pause for a minute. I need a chance to regroup mentally.
But did you have a job at that point?
I still had a job at this point.
Okay. Yep.
And I said, okay, that's fair enough.
Now before you get to that, can I ask you a question? Yep. When you say the business failed, did it fail because of something he did that was unscrupulous? Did he take advantage of things? We couldn't get the people?
We couldn't get the people.
Okay.
So in that business, you do need a nurse on,
of course,
in-house or
on-site. Licensed RN, right?
24/7, yes, 24/7. And if you have... Okay, and the house would hold 6 residents, right? That's the regulation.
That's the size of the
size of it, right? At 6 residents, it's producing good cash flow, significant profits. At 3 residents, it's breaking even, and at 1 resident, it's hemorrhaging money.
Right. So you got to fill this building up.
Got to fill it, and we couldn't fill it. Long story short, so we were hemorrhaging money. So I went back to my wife and she's like, 6 months, let's just take a break. I need a break. Fine. 6 months later, I'm like, all right, here we go. We're getting back in the game. Right. And she's like, you know what? You get back in the game. I'm a teacher. I'm a middle school science teacher. I don't really want to be on this roller coaster ride. However, I trust you. I believe in you. I know you're going to be
a good wife.
Yeah. Just do what you got to do. and don't involve me in the day-to-day drama because it's too much for me to have to think about all the time.
You guys still married?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So you married your second wife first, so that was a good move.
I married my second wife. I said I had some personal stuff that was.
Oh, you. This is the second marriage.
This is the second marriage.
No kids from your first marriage.
Two. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you got Okay. Yep.
And they were at this time. They were, you know, they were 16, 13.
Okay, teenagers. Sure.
Teenagers. Which girls? Which has their its own little.
Yeah, I got two of those. 14 and 16. Yeah.
14 and 16. So you're right in the heart of it. Oh, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
My oldest boy, he's 19, but the girls are 14 and 16. Yeah.
So 6 months later, she's like I said, good, love you. Good luck. You're awesome. Just don't stress me out with this. So that was like, she was sort of the governor to my race car when we were investing, because I was always like, let's go get more houses. Let's buy more. Let's put in offers. Let's ramp this up. And she was the one I was going, calm down. Like, let's just get this one done.
The voice of reason.
Voice of reason, slow and steady wins a race. But that being said, once the governor was pulled off and I had this race car out of the garage, like it did take off. Like I started flipping two and three houses at a time, not just one. Yeah. And which is what led me ultimately to being able to leave my job. And
now a word from our sponsors. NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. It's everything you need to market online, and it's totally automated. Build custom websites, optimize them for Google rankings, and automatically create ads and social media posts to drive the most traffic to your sites. Their fully integrated system generates regular email newsletters, manages all your customers and prospects, and provides up-to-date marketing analytics. NowSite. You do your thing, and we'll do the marketing. Use our affiliate link in the show notes to learn more about NowSite and how it can help your business. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21,000. That's LAW to 21,000, or follow our link in the show notes to learn how you can get this valuable tool for you and your company. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their link in our show notes to learn more and get connected with Fetch. And now back to our show.
And you know, she's conservative and that's great. It's good to have that balance. So the compromise was the reason I was able, or the way that I was able to leave my day job, which I made pretty good money. I was, you know, white collar, mid-level management, international automotive company. I said, listen, if I can save 1 year's salary in cash, put it in the bank. Worst case scenario, 8 months from now, I'll go back out into the job market and I'll find a job. At that time, the jobs were actually, it was good. It was good market.
Right.
It'll give me 4 months to find a job and no harm, right?
So you make her feel comfortable.
Yeah, I'll try it out. So I did that. I put the year's salary away.
And now, Mike, since I'm from New Jersey, I don't know the economics of real estate out there. And I don't want to get into your personal situation, but on a deal, so if you flipped a house, What was the kind of profit on average you would pull out of a deal? Was it, you know, 10 grand? Was it 100 grand?
No, a very middle of the road, reasonable base hit would be $15,000 to $20,000.
Okay. Yeah. So they're smaller homes and the prices obviously are lower because you're in Michigan than you are back here. Okay.
Back
good.
Then I was buying houses for $45,000, putting 20 into it, selling it for 115, you know, whatever.
Right. So if you want to make, you know, $150,000 a year in income, you got to be doing, you know, 10 deals that succeed a year at least. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Something like that.
Right.
Yeah. 8 to 10, something like
okay.
that. Okay. Yeah. So
not undoable, but I just want to understand the economics of it. Okay.
Yeah. Definitely not undoable. And like I said, I started ramping up and doing two or three at a time. So it was going great. It was going really, really well.
But what's the life cycle of a flip when you close on the property, and how soon can you sell it? Take you 60 days or more?
If things go well, you close the day you close, you should be closing on the other end and getting paid 4 to 5 months later.
Oh, that long. Okay.
approximately.
So you want things in the pipeline all the time. So they start coming out.
Yeah, usually, and a lot of times this is kind of getting into the weeds, but you know, there's a FHA requirement, as a seasoning requirement. It's a 90-day seasoning requirement.
Right, so I know what seasoning is.
You can't sell for 90 right. days. So that would hold me up. If that wasn't the case, I would say when I close, I'd probably be selling it 2 to 3 months later if I didn't have, but you know, we sometimes you get a little bit delayed too with some of the construction stuff. So I don't know. Yeah, 4 or 5 months.
You couldn't even list the property for 90 days?
No, you can list it.
You can list it. Just couldn't close.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep. So little hurdles, but honestly, you know, you go through cycles too. In Michigan, we have 4 seasons, and in the winter time, things slow down. It gets a little tougher. In the spring and summer, things go a little faster. So mm-hmm. I'd probably average 4 months. You know, some months would be 3, some months would be 6.
Just
on the time of year.
Okay. All right. So I understand. All right. So here we are.
That got me up to quitting my job, full-time entrepreneur, flipping houses. Life is great. My business has changed a little bit since then. Went through a little period, and this is just like moving with the cheese a little bit and understanding where your strengths are. So I had a scenario where I bought a house. I relied heavily on a realtor to help me find houses and then ultimately value them, so I know what I could sell them for, so I could run my numbers. And my realtor was great for a while, and then we ran across this house and they gave me the value and I put the work into it and borrowed the money and all this. And during the project, the contractor that I had used on probably 10 houses before this, very reliable, good contractor, just really started kind of flaking out on me, not showing up on the job site, overcharging me for things, trying to slip things in that weren't done, just really kind of crazy, underhanded stuff.
Right, like he's having financial problems other places, he's trying to.
Yeah,
it's what happens with a lot of these guys.
It totally happens all the time with contractors, unfortunately. Right. It's part of the game. My realtor, though, at the same time on the same job, really missed the number when it came to the resale number. So I was faced with having to find a new contractor, and the realtor I'd kind of lost confidence in because he really, really missed it bad on this one. And I didn't lose money on the deal, because in real estate, when you're flipping, that's why I always shoot for $20,000 to $30,000 profit margin, because when things go really, really bad,
You have a cushion.
If you make $5,000, it's better than losing, right?
You get out unscathed.
Right. So that's kind of what happened, but I had to find some new people for my team, but the opportunities were still coming. I was still finding deals and finding houses that made sense to flip. So while I was in this period of, I don't have a contractor, I don't have a realtor, I'm not really equipped to do this thing, had an opportunity to come across my desk for a house. I know all the flippers in my area. And so I just called one and said, listen, I've got this deal. I can't do it. I told him the whole story about the contractor and everything, and said, I can't perform on this fast enough. Are you interested in this property? Would you want to buy it and just do it yourself and just kind of pay me something for it? And he's like, yeah, what do you want for it? Well, I had agreed to a price with the homeowner of $95,000. He was willing to pay $110,000 for the deal. And so I ended up flipping the deal to him, letting him do it. I got paid $15,000, which I told you was kind of a base hit type number when you're flipping anyway. And I did that deal, and it was just like, wow, that was the fastest, easiest thing I've ever done in my life.
Now, Mike, they call that wholesaling, right?
Yeah, wholesaling.
Basically selling the contract is what you're doing, kind of.
You're just selling the contract.
Not taking possession of anything.
Nope. Never take possession of it.
Okay.
Nope.
Yeah.
So I did that. Loved it. Felt good. And at this point, by the way, I had been flipping for 6 years. I had sort of had it up to my eyeballs with contractors, appraisers, mortgage companies, realtors. And I sort of cleared the deck of all of those different people and was dealing just directly with an investor who was usually very black and white. There's not a lot of drama. It's just tell me the numbers. Let me go look at the house. Yes or no. It's just simple, right? So I did it, and it was great. Not too long afterward, like days later, I got another opportunity, almost identical house, almost identical area. It was just a carbon copy of the first one, called the same guy and said, hey, listen, you're not going to believe this. I got another one. It's very similar to the last one. I bought it for the same amount. I didn't say that on the conversation initially, but I said, would you pay the same amount, like $110,000 for this house? And he said, let me look at it. Sent it to him. 10 minutes later, he's like, I'll take that one too. So,
and you were already in contract on the.
I was already in contract.
Okay. Yes.
So, a wholesaler was born, to say to
there you
say
go. The least. Right.
I was really, really happy with that model. I'm really impatient, and that kind of velocity, that kind of turnover and turnaround is really exciting for me. So I sort of switched my model. I still flipped houses here and there strategically, but I flipped my model to wholesaling and kind of did that. And around that time too, I started taking on, because I was getting, when you're a wholesaler in real estate, typically you need more deals to fuel the machine.
Right, because the margins are smaller. You're not fixing them up. You're not getting any sweat equity.
Exactly. So right. I started doing a lot of advertising and marketing to try to find, you know, homeowners that were in a situation where they wanted to sell for cash. And so I was getting more opportunities, and some of these opportunities that are coming along were great for rentals. And some of the people that I knew, who even people who had rentals, you know, in Michigan, you know, there's good and bad, right? Our house prices are low. The profits might be a little lower than they would be in New York or California. But one thing that we do have is we have cash flowing rentals that have ROI, very, very pedestrian, 13 to 15% ROI. It's not really unusual. It's not That's even high. All that exciting for people here. So I was finding opportunities for rentals that would be 12, 13% ROI. And my
can't get that anywhere.
Turning their nose up at it. I couldn't sell it locally. So I'm like, this is asinine. I'll buy the house for that.
Right. You know?
So I started putting together my own capital and buying rentals from the opportunities that were coming across my desk anyway. Now,
as part of Mike, does the 12, 13% just, is that a cash on cash number? Meaning it doesn't account for appreciation of the property or anything like that?
Correct.
I mean, so your total return could be in the 20s.
It's
who wouldn't do that? Yeah, that's funny.
And really, to be quite like specific, I was marketing these houses where my investors could get like 12, 13, 14%. But if I took that markup away and I bought it myself, right, I'm actually getting 15% because I'm not marking it up to myself, right?
Yeah.
So these are cash flowing great. So I started putting together a portfolio, and you know, years now I have like 20 that I'm putting, and I really haven't actively been buying.
And what are they, one or two family houses, or
they're single family homes?
They're all single family homes. Yep. Okay.
And also, you know, again, in Michigan, we have a nice little cross section of opportunities. We have some houses that you can buy that will cash flow quite nicely, but they're probably not going to appreciate that much. They're in probably sea level neighborhoods.
Yeah, that's common, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's other houses that'll cash flow at, you know, 10 to 12%, and they will appreciate because they're in a little nicer neighborhoods, you know.
Of course.
B plus, B minus type neighborhoods. So I started doing that. So now it's kind of a three-pronged attack. I wholesale, I flip, and I've got a rental portfolio that I'm building.
So you have guys that go and plumb out the toilets in the middle of the night and all that stuff to take care of that stuff, you know?
Yeah. So when it comes to rentals, I hire a management company. So I have a property management company.
It's hard to do if you have two. When you have 20, the economics make sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, to do that. Do you ever have any problems with, I don't know what the eviction rules are out there, but you got to evict people and you got to get a lawyer, or does the management company handle all that stuff?
Management company handles it. I did have an interesting one though recently. Actually, this was last fall, they stopped paying rent.
Right.
And this one was not being managed by the rental company because it was the first one I ever bought. The lady was already there. She had been there for 5 years, older lady. Like, it was just clock. There was nothing to do. So I just thought, I'll let her send the payments directly to me and I won't even bother with the management company. I won't pay them to do nothing. So, and I thought if the house ever goes vacant, I'll bring them in, they can fill it and they'll manage it, right?
Got it.
The lady stopped paying rent to me and I'm busy and it just sort of slipped through the cracks for like 3 months. I totally missed that the rent wasn't coming in.
Right.
And when I finally got involved, I had my assistant, you know, reach out. They don't answer the phone. She went there and knocked on the door. Nobody answers the door. So we're like, we had to send an eviction notice, right? 7-day notice to, they have to pay or they go through the process. And nothing, right? They didn't respond to that. They didn't show up the court date. Anyways, long story short, come to find out, because we're putting things on their door now, right?
Yeah. Is that what you have to do in Michigan?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Somebody from their family calls and says, listen, our mother passed away. That was her. Yeah.
Okay.
She had passed away. That's why she's not paying rent.
Yeah. There you go.
We didn't know, right?
Right.
So, and they're like, well, she passed away. You know, we need some time. And I'm like, listen, you got to move her stuff. Like, we got to get the stuff on. It's now we're talking. We're at like 6 months now.
Yeah, but doesn't that break the lease? Meaning you got 30 days. You can store her stuff, but you can take possession of the property because she's died.
Yes, I can. And I was trying to be sensitive and not just, you know, do what I could do by the letter of the law. I was trying to be a little bit sensitive to it. So that was interesting. They did end up clearing it out. And I'll tell you that the way she was living, it was bad. I had never seen a house in worse condition on the inside. And shame on me because it wasn't being managed by the property management company. Right. I wasn't going in there every 30 or 40 days.
Yeah, they would have checked on it, right?
They would have checked on it. This house was a disaster. So now I'm flipping it, actually. Luckily, I bought it so long ago that the appreciation, even in this neighborhood, which isn't the best, it's more than doubled in price. So I'm just flipping it. Just putting some work into it and going to sell it.
It's funny. I used to represent two guys who used to do a lot of, not necessarily wholesaling, but they would do fix ups and flips. And sometimes people were, you know, getting foreclosed on or whatever. And there was some equity left in the home and they would give cash for keys. Say, listen, well, you can stay for 6 months, but then we got to fix the house up. So here's 10 grand. Yep. We'll move you and this and that. So there was one guy, I remember, he was much older and he needed money. And so they said, listen, you can stay here for the rest of your life. He was old. I mean, he was in his 80s. But if you leave before you die, you know, if you vacate the property, we'll give you whatever it was, 10, 5,000. So he passes away. So I get a call from another lawyer who represents the ex-wife. I don't know if they were actually divorced, but they were separated. And he says, I just want, you know, can you send my client the $5,000? And I go, for what? Well, he vacated the property. I said, I don't think the definition of vacating the property means dragging his dead body out of the building.
Exactly.
You know, and at the end of the day, my clients ended up paying like $3,000. It just wasn't worth it to go to court and try and fight this thing. They would have been paying me more money. And we paid him some money. And the guy was a nice guy. So but we didn't like her. But, you know, we felt like he'd be rolling over in his grave. But it's funny, people's interpretation of vacating the building.
I know. It's so crazy. I know. We've had so many crazy stories. I had one property that I rent. This was a few years back. I got a call. I used to live in the house. So it became a rental of mine because when I went to leave, it really hadn't appreciated that much. And I thought I'd rather just keep it as a rental than sell it.
This is a different house. This is the one that the lady died.
Different house. But I knew the neighbor. I was good friends with the neighbor because I'd lived there for about 5 years. And he calls me one night. He goes, I don't know how to tell you this, but there is a knife fight happening in your front yard right now.
God.
So the parents had gone away on vacation for like a long weekend.
Right.
And the kids, teenagers, were going to have a party.
There you go.
Things got out of control. And next thing you know, there's two kids in the front yard with knives, like going to stab each other. And the police got called. And
I sure hope the neighbors called the police before they called you. I mean,
that's a great question. I don't know what happened first. I just know the police ended up there.
Like, what do you want me to do about it? Yeah, right?
Exactly. I know. Yeah. I was like, thanks a lot for stressing me out. So that happened, and luckily, no one was seriously hurt. I think a kid got a little nick.
He had
to go get some stitches, but just weird stuff. When you have rentals, man, there could be some weird. This is specifically why I didn't have that with the rental with the management company either. So that's why the management company has all my properties, and I don't even want to. I don't want to know unless I need to do something, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and in the real estate business is funny. Got to make sure you have insurance because the guy who gets stabbed could sue you.
Yeah.
And you're like, what do I have to do with this? Well, he's your tenant, you know? And next thing you know, you're trying to settle and give him money because they're going looking for money.
Yep.
It's crazy. So you built a portfolio. So this was about, at what point, what year were we when you had all three of these things really going on? Is this to date or this is a little ways back?
I mean, it's to date. I'm still wholesaling, flipping, and buying rentals. Rental buying has slowed down a little bit. Prices are going up, obviously. Once they go up to a point, it doesn't make as much sense. But I started the year that I switched my model, and that's kind of when everything started ramping up too. That's when it really hockey sticked. That was like 2015.
That's when the wholesaling started.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's when the whole
and then when at what point was it just because people knew you that you started doing the coaching, the mentoring? Now you're writing a book, you know?
Yeah. So what happened was I became friendly with someone in California. I have a podcast.
That's true.
And the guy who mentored me or kind of coached me when I was starting my podcast to help me start was a guy named John Lee Dumas. He's humongous in podcasting, but he's more of like he interviews entrepreneurs and stuff, but he's been around for a long time. Anyways, okay. he mentored me and he said, "Hey, I've got this guy in California that is also a house flipper. I think you guys would get along. I should put you together." And he did. And I got to know this guy, and he was flipping 100 houses a year in California,
wow.
which sounds like BS.
I guess it depends on the market you're in, right?
Yeah. He had just really had his systems and processes dialed in, and he was just crushing it. So I got to know him a little bit, kind of really got to understand what he was doing. And I knew that he was legitimately doing that. It wasn't a marketing number. It was an actual number.
Right.
And, he said, "I'm going to start a mastermind. If you're interested in being in it, I'd love to have you in it. It's going to be for high level investing, and we're going to share all these concepts and things." So he started doing
masterminds.
That.
Basically, a high level study group, right?
It's a high level study group, but the way I like to think of it is, it's a study group, but it's also like you're bringing all these scientists together who have their own laboratories, and we all go our separate ways. We do experiments in our laboratories and we come back and we share the results, what works and what doesn't. And it really helps accelerate the learning a little bit. And
right. But you're paying to join the group, right? It's a,
yes, yes. Yeah. This is an extremely expensive yearly buy-in.
Right.
But you're going to surround yourself with people that are extremely right. high level production. So did that. Loved it. That actually had a significant role in my business really exploding. And at some point I said, "Listen, you know, we have this group, and it's a group where the person that you're trying to attract into this group is at a certain level. There are people that are below that level who need some kind of help too. What if we had a slightly lower option for people to buy into and be a part of that would be helpful?" And right. I'd like to run that, and I'd like to be a part of it. So I kind of inserted myself with some thoughts of how I could add to the value of this group.
Got it.
And just started coaching and doing that mentoring on that level, and then speaking soon followed. And there's some events that are put on by this mastermind. It's called Seven Figure Flipping is the name of the mastermind, but there's an event every year called Flip Hacking Live. And it's a 3-day event. It's in San Diego. Usually this year it's in Orlando, but, if we have it at all, right?
I mean, right, yeah, well,
but
it'll just be a break. It won't be a termination.
Exactly. So I started speaking on stage there, and then, you know, I had some cool things happen. I'm a fan of Gary Vaynerchuk, who's a marketing guy.
Yep, he's from my area.
Okay. Oh yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. The wine library.
He's huge. Yeah.
Over here. Yeah.
So I reached out to him through direct message a couple of years ago, and said, "Hey, I was trying to get him on my podcast."
I'm sure.
And he didn't respond to me, but. A couple days later, his team, Gary...
they got a big media company now, right?
Media reached out to me and said, "We're having an event in Miami. It's called Agent 2021. And we have a bunch of different kinds of agents, real estate agents, insurance agents, all these different agents. And we're going to put on this event for a couple days. And we'd like you to speak." And I was like, there's no way in the world they reached out to me through anything else other than the fact that I reached out to Gary directly. And right. I'm sure he was like, "Who's this guy? He wants me on his podcast.
Maybe he'll be right."
And he looked me up and then probably said, "Hey, I'm going to whatever." So I got to speak at his event, which was really, really cool. What really well-run event. So that sort of like launched where my whole speaking side of what I do.
Okay, good. So, so you still got your real estate, you're still doing that, right?
Yep.
And you're doing the coaching and the mastermind group and all that type of stuff, which is good stuff. And then how did the book come about?
So the book came about when I started the mastermind back in it was January of 2016. It's the first time we all met. It was the first time that started. And the guy who ran it, his name's Justin Williams, California. It's the guy that I had become friendly with.
Okay.
He was running it. And he's like, "Listen, I'm gonna have a contest." And there was about 20 businesses that were involved in this mastermind. He said, "The first person to take their business to 7 figures in gross profit, I'm going to send you to Hawaii."
This is the first year? Meeting.
Yeah. Okay. He's like, "Here's the deal." He's a very off the cuff, spontaneous guy. He did not plan it. Trust me.
Right. He just thought of it. I'm going to do it.
There was a lot of good energy and everyone's excited. You gotta like, he's like, "Okay, like that, right. I'm going to send you to Hawaii if you get sold." So I call my wife after we leave there. I'm like, "Listen, here's what was said." And she's like, "Oh, we're going to Hawaii. We're going to do this." So we buckled down.
The hell with all the conservative stuff. We got to blow this one out, right?
Exactly. So at the time I was doing, I was probably on about a $300,000 pace at that.
Okay. Point, right? But you weren't halfway there.
I wasn't halfway there.
Right.
And they made this arrangement. So during the year 2016, I ramped up from a $200,000 to $300,000 company to I went over $1 million in gross profits and, and won. So there was a real hockey stick there. And and so since then, you know, when I'm on stage, a lot of times that will be referenced, like, hey, this is this guy who joined our group. He's one of the first people. And it, it's a marketing thing a little bit, but it's true. I mean, I did it. So people will come to me and say, oh, okay, I have a business. I'm a one person band right now. I need to, I really want to ramp it up. What did you do? Like, how did you go from a couple of deals a month to 10 to 12 deals a month? Like, what were the steps? And I've retold this 100 times, probably 1,000 times.
Right.
And so at one point I'm like, I should just write a book. Like, I should put in a book. Enough people want to know. It's an interesting story. Right. It's good stuff. It's good, relatable business advice. It's not just real estate related. The anecdotes in the book are real estate because that's what I do. But
But it can be applied to most businesses.
Yeah, the concepts are very universal. So that's why I wrote the book. I called it Level Jumping because the way I looked at it, having this information, and by the way, this is all, I didn't invent any of this. It was all stuff that I learned from other folks that were doing things at a much higher level than me, who I said to them, what did you do to get there? And one guy in particular, his name's Andy McFarlane. He was about he was probably about 5 years ahead of me. So in other words, when I joined the group 5 years earlier, he was where I was in my business. And I said, how did you get to where you are now over the 5 years? What did you do? Like, what did you implement? How did you do it? And what mistakes did you make? What should I not do? And he kind of laid it out for me. And I said, well, if you did it in 5 years, but you had to figure it out the whole time and make mistakes, you know, two steps forward, one step back kind of a thing. What if I never had to take that step back, or at least not the steps that you took back? I could avoid all those. And I, like I said earlier, I'm very impatient. What if I could compress everything you did and compress it into a year? Could that happen? And that's exactly what I did. So that's what people ask. That's the book. I call it Level Jumping because I really feel like I jumped levels. I went from where I was, and I didn't go to the next level because that's just normal progression. I sort of jumped levels because I had people to lean on who had been there before me that could kind of help point out the potholes so I didn't hit them.
Right. You had a free trip to Hawaii and your wife was going to kill you if you didn't figure a way to get there. So necessity is the mother of invention.
Exactly. There you go. Exactly. So once I had, you know, she never holds me back, but she was like, sometimes she's extra motivation like that. If she knows or something like that, it'll be like, hey, I see you're watching TV. Like, what else could you be doing? And I'm like, you know what? You're right. I'm actually wasting time right now. So it's always good to have someone kind of holding you accountable. That,
well, do you think the carrot at the end of the stick kind of drove you to expand and push yourself beyond what you would have done if you just, you know, sat around? Or do you think you would have figured it out at some point and said, how can I, you know, triple this business, quadruple this business? That's basically what
I would have figured, especially being part of the mastermind. I would have figured it out. I probably wouldn't have done it as soon. But to be honest with you, the funny part of it is I didn't really care about the Hawaii thing. It was it was the competition that drove me, wanting to be the first person across the finish line. That was way more fuel for me than Hawaii.
Right. The ego that was driving you to be
purely ego that made me do it.
That's not bad.
The trip was just incidental. It was great. It was a lot of fun. But honestly, having the bragging rights of doing it first was way more important to me.
Yeah, that's all good ego. I mean, there's bad ego that like hurts other people, and there's good ego that pushes you to heights that you probably wouldn't reach, right?
Yeah, and there was a lot of trash talking in this group. We became a pretty close knit group, and
I'm sure,
you know, a lot of back and forth trash talking about who was going to get there. So that kind of
still friends with all the guys. They're still involved in the group.
Yeah, still friends with them. Yeah, as a matter of fact, one of the guys in the group. Interesting story. One of the guys in the group. So this group was high level, and it was the buy-in was really the barrier to entry. It was
sure. Well, there should
not try to be secretive about it.
No, but that's the way these things work. Yeah.
It was high level, but
25 grand,
25,000. Yeah.
Yeah. Now that keeps out the window shoppers. That's for sure. Yeah.
Now, what we did have, and we didn't realize it at the time, was there was a guy who was in there who probably had no business being there based off of his experience. He could just write the check.
And right. He had the 25.
He'd only really done like one or two deals ever.
Okay.
But he got in there. And as it turns out, the guy is phenomenally smart, phenomenally talented, phenomenally driven. Fast forward now the group isn't 20 people. Now the group is 150 people today.
Right.
He owns it. the guy who started it, Justin, eventually sold the group to him. Now the guy who had no business being there, he owns the group, and he's far and away has the biggest, most successful company in the entire group. Far, not even close.
Now, all these guys aren't real estate guys, are they?
Yeah, all real estate.
Oh, they're all real estate
all
guys.
All real estate. Yep, in that group, it's all real estate. Yep. So a good success story. Guy who owns a company now was probably had no business being there, but...
Isn't that the way it works a lot of times, though? Right?
He's just a smart guy. I mean,
yeah.
he's just the guys that are smart
and the guys that are driven, the guys that are gorillas, I don't care what business they're in. It's the relentless people that it doesn't happen. Yeah. It's never easy for anybody.
Right.
Right? It's just some people are more driven to do it and other people are more overwhelmed in doing it. You know, it's I don't think there was something I read years ago, and I think it was a speech from like the 1930s where the person basically said that successful people do the things that unsuccessful people are unwilling to do. It's not that they can't do it.
Yeah.
They just don't have that drive. They don't have that fire in their belly. They don't they haven't suffered hardship. I don't know, whatever it is that drives a particular person. They, you know, they haven't experienced it. Like you said, they're going like a lot of your relatives, old ancestors, they went to work and they didn't know any better. Yep. And they weren't the kind of person that said, I want more or what else can I do? Or I don't want to do this for the rest of my life.
Nope.
You know, you know, one of the reasons I ended up in law out of, fairness to myself, but honestly, is that I kind of just followed everything that I was told to do, you know, go to college. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do after college. So my grandmother's like, go to law school. May she rest in peace.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and here I am. Then I got involved and interested in entrepreneurship. But, you know, I'm 53 years old, so I am a business attorney. I'm not going to break out and get involved in other things. I'd owned real estate for a while. We owned some multifamily homes and made some money doing it and so forth. But, you know, I'm building my entrepreneurial side that way, helping people kind of hopefully make less mistakes. They need to make mistakes because I think they don't learn if they don't make some mistakes. Right? Everything goes real well. As soon as you're out of the picture and something clobbers them over the head, they're not going to know what to do. So what stage is the book at? Is it out or is it in?
So the book Level Jumping will be out on June 1st. So I don't know when this is going to air exactly, but it'll be out on June 1st. So you can.
This will probably be coming out like in July sometime.
Oh, perfect. So the book's out. It's there. It's on Amazon. Look for Level Jumping.
Okay.
There's no other book called that. I'm positive because nobody knows what it is until I explain it. But
you know, maybe we can get like 5 copies from you.
Yeah.
And then we can figure out a way to motivate people to get them or
100%
give them away or some based on something.
Done. I'll send you 5 copies. Done.
Okay. Well, I'll buy them, but you know, if you get it, great. If you want to give them to me, even better. Maybe we can raise some money for some charity or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No, that's fine. I'll give them to you. I'll send them to you for free.
Okay.
No problem. Let's think of some cool way to get people involved, and maybe it'll excite other people to go and get it.
So, have you've coached people that are not necessarily in the real estate business too, since your whole involvement, or is it really centers around real estate?
It's mostly around real estate, but I have not formally coached. I guess it would be more like a mentorship. But that's something that I'm very interested in because it's sort of like, you know, great comedians sometimes have a hard time getting dramatic roles. I've been in real estate.
Yeah, and, no, and my, you want to see goal, if you can do it
part
in
of
the
my
next
goal with
industry.
This book, yeah, sure. It's like I know that I can help people with the things that I did to take my business from where it was to where it is. I know it applies to other businesses. So I'm very excited to go out and meet other people in other industries and get those opportunities to present what I did to other people to see if they're interested in being mentored or coached.
Right, right. So have you come across any interesting businesses that you've met people that do or not yet?
Outside of real estate?
Yeah.
No, not too many. Honestly, it's been, like I said, it's been informal. A lot of like email back and forth, kind of give them advice. Nothing super in-depth, but that's the direction I'm going for sure.
And what's the plan with the book? Like you have a publicist, going to get you speaking engagements. I mean, obviously you're going on podcasts, so that helps. And what's the name of your podcast, Mike?
Just Start Real Estate.
Okay, fine. So we'll put a link to that in the
thank you.
In the show notes and get your listeners to me and my listeners to you, hopefully. And
teach
some
totally.
People some things. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the goal with the book really, to be honest with you, is it's getting out of my brain and off my chest everything that people ask me all the time. So I can direct them to that resource. But also, I'm sure you know this. There are opportunities that are out there for speaking where having a book it certainly makes the path easier.
It's like having a podcast. It's like being a guest on a podcast, writing an article.
Yep. It
definitely raises your level of credibility.
Yep. Yep. And that's the goal. If I don't become a millionaire off the book, that's fine. I want to get the book in as many people's hands as I can so that I can raise that awareness.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, I think in overall books aren't huge moneymakers as more as they are tools for you to share your ideas and help people. And but that will lead to coaching and speaking and, you know, and probably other real estate opportunities and people know you and they bring you deals. I mean, that's the way it all kind of comes together.
Totally.
If you like our podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is a production of Mitchell C. Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about Mitchell and his practice, you can find him on social media or visit his website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.